On the show today, we talked to Jame Telfer, a proud First Nation woman and the founder of the essential oil wellness brand Earth Blender, diagnosed with polycystic ovary syndrome at 18. Jame was told she was infertile, and at the age of 20, she gave birth to the first of her four children. Jame's story through the births of her children starts with the trauma of an emergency cesarean through to the empowering and healing VBAC birth on country. Along this journey, Jame comes to realize how this birth is healing not only for her, but the women in her lineage.
Indigenous Health Med Talk with Dr. Danielle Arabina. Yarning with innovators, trailblazers and community leaders in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health and medicine. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are advised that this podcast may contain the voices of persons now deceased. This podcast is a General Practice Training Queensland initiative supported by Australian General Practice Training and the Australian Government.
Hello again, it's Dr. Danielle Arabina. I'm joined in studio today via the technology of Zoom. I've got the lovely Jame Telfer here, who is going to tell us a yarn about her, it's almost like a heroine journey, how she reclaimed her birthing from having a couple of cesareans to having a VBAC on country. Jame also runs a fantastic aromatherapy-based business, and she's also an artist called Earth Blended, but we'll get to that. So welcome to the podcast, Jame.
Thank you for having me.
So, Jame, I've heard so much about you. I do follow you on the gram, like all the cool kids. One of my staff told me about listening to your amazing podcast and Australian birth stories. So I'd love to hear about that. So, darling, just to start with, can you tell us who's your mob?
G'day, my name's Jame. I'm a Goombegi Nyami, a Goombegi woman, and I am currently living on country, which is up northern coast of New South Wales. My family are the Yellow Rock mob from Yeranga. Hello, if anyone's listening. So I am currently a mum of three beautiful little boys, and I'm pregnant with my first little girl. I run Earth Blended. It started about 2.5 years ago now. I actually started when I was 1 week into maternity leave with our youngest, Rain. And I do lots of essential oil type products. I'm an aromatherapist, and I like to look for the alternative sort of option where I can, and bringing a little bit of my culture and a little bit of my own sort of things that I've taught myself, especially like I like to do a lot of stuff around birthing, being a mom, and having, you know, the experiences that I have had with birthing.
And I think that that's so important, Jame, because birthing and being a mum is not a sterile experience. It's nothing that we should be keeping in, like, in the medical paradigm. Like, there's so many other things that happen. We change. It's like alchemy. It's a spiritual experience. So I love that. I'm a big one for, you know, adding the adjunct, beautiful healing modalities that we can do. You, like many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, were diagnosed with PCOS at a very young age. So you're 18 and you were told that you were infertile, couldn't have kids. So you threw caution to the wind, as you do when you're told that you don't need to worry about that. And then next minute, 2 years later,
surprise
pregnancy.
In saying that, I have heard so many stories of one, people telling you they have PCOS and they're devastated they can't have kids. And then so many people saying, I've had like six kids and I got told I had PCOS. So if you get told that, please still use protection if you don't want a baby.
Yes. You never know. So you're 20 years old, you've got this surprise pregnancy that you weren't planning on having, and you started moving through the hospital system. So you were seeing midwives. How was that experience for you?
At the time, I thought I was grown up, but my gosh, I was such a baby still. Like, the midwife system that I was going through in the public health, which, I mean, most people I think do, it's just seeing a different midwife every time. Like, I did not know a single one of the midwife's names. You know, you'd go in for your appointment, you'd sit around for 2 hours waiting, finally see them, they'd do a quick little thing on bubs, and like, most of the time I had no idea what was going on, to be honest. Like, it's only when something's wrong and you can see in their eyes something's wrong. Otherwise, it's just like, okay, you just sort of trot along your way through, doing as I was told, not knowing any different, really.
As we all do. I had a young baby. I was 21. And again, same story. I was told I had PCOS. So we're like twins. We're like PCOS twins, babes. Now, your journey through your first pregnancy had a bit of a spanner thrown in the works when you woke up and you thought you'd broken your ankle.
Yeah, I think I was like, I would have been like in between 35 and 36 weeks. By the time I was like I had my baby shower at 34 weeks, and around that time and just after, I was at the size, like I was a balloon, like I was really swollen. I didn't know any difference. No one said anything to me. I didn't think anything of it. But this one specific day, I was like, my ankle's purple. Like, I'm certain I've broke my ankle. I went up to maternity, being so far along, and they were like, no, your ankle's not broken, but like you are extremely full of fluid. So we just want to do some tests on you. They checked my blood pressure and straight away they're like, okay, your blood pressure's really high. They did like the other tests. I think it was a urine test or something. They said that I had preeclampsia. So they put me on some medication and just said, look, these are the different symptoms to look out for. Get any comeback. I was there the next day. I was like, I've got a smashing headache. I'm really worried about this. It should be known that I have really bad anxiety. So I was like, you've just told me something's wrong. Like, if there's something wrong, like, keep me in here.
Yes.
And yeah, they basically did. They admitted me to the ward and I was on medication for maybe 48 hours and the blood pressure wasn't coming down. I remember that night they were checking my blood pressure all night. And I mean, I didn't even know what high blood pressure was. Like, I don't know anything about any of it. And then the next day, I remember walking down to the canteen with my now husband. I was just strolling back up to maternity. I remember I was eating a Snickers bar and I was in the elevator and this doctor got in. He's like, oh, you're Jamie. Like, I remember you from yesterday. I just want to let you know you're having your baby today. And I was like,
what?
Yeah, like this guy casually said this to me in the hallway.
At least you didn't choke on your Snickers.
Telling me that I'm having my baby today. We get back up to the room. They inserted some gels. The next morning, I was 1 centimetre and they said, okay, that's it. We're going in. We're breaking your waters and you're going to have your baby. Did not like warn me, being 36 weeks pregnant and my body's not ready, that it was a potential thing that I would have a cesarean, let alone actually get put to sleep. Which is what happened. I had no idea. Anyways, I labored. It didn't progress. There were heaps of issues with me having preeclampsia. My kidney and stuff were shutting down. They lost the baby's heart rate. And then they are telling me that I need to go for a cesarean. So all I know is that I've gone down. I had to have an epidural, so I didn't really feel too much. I was there for a bit. Next thing I know, I'm being told at like 11 o'clock in the morning, 12 o'clock in the morning, I need to go for a cesarean. I'm bawling my eyes out. I was so scared. I was crying. My mum's holding my hand. Like, mind you, my mum's only like 40 because my mum had me at the same age. So my mum's only younger self. We're both crying to each other, not knowing if I'm going to come out of this or what's going on. They end up knocking me out, not telling my husband, rolling a baby out to him, and he didn't even know if I was alive. So it was a pretty traumatic experience. Just to think about how little you know at that age, realizing that I was a child put into this situation and not really told much more else.
And it must have been so horrible for your husband not to know what was happening.
The first video of my mum recording the baby, he's like, is she alive? Like, to the nurse.
And I think that goes to tell a lot about that time and how important it is for us to have, as doctors and nurses and health professionals, to have really clear communication with our patients. You know, that's something that we're striving to do more and more of, but you can see how triggering it is, particularly if you have a background of anxiety, as you said. How did you go with afterwards?
After the cesarean, I recovered horribly. Like, I woke up and was like buzzing, like, is this my baby? I had no idea what was going on. Waking up and just having him there. And, I didn't wake up in recovery. I didn't really wake up till I was back on the ward and everything was fine. And I was okay. I was just happy I had my baby. It wasn't really until sort of later on in my second birth that I realized how much it really affected me. And it was just little things along the way, I guess, that my husband picks up on, or other things that other people pick up on that I didn't really know that I was suffering from. So, yeah, it took a while really to really understand how I was feeling about it all.
So you're in that immediate postpartum phase. You've had your kinder surprise pregnancy, had an emergency cesarean where it was a cat one, you were knocked out, your husband thought you died. So you've got through all of that and now you come out and something in your gut was telling you that there was something not right with your boy.
Sorry, you had really prominent stridor. And I only know what that was because I was going through it. Basically, he had really noisy breathing from the moment he was born. And I kept going back to the hospital. And something that I could urge to any doctors listening is don't tell mums they're first-time mums and that they don't know what they're talking about. Because I got told more than 15 occasions that I was a first-time mum because I had a cesarean. He hadn't pushed the mucus out of his lungs. And that's why he was breathing like that. Fast forward 3 months, he was in ICU in Westmead's Children's Hospital. And we were there for nearly a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
So stressful.
Yeah, it was. And look, I personally struggled afterwards, like when he was better. He's almost eight. And this happened all around between when he was born till two. We had a few things in between, but nothing major. And I'm always waiting for the other foot to drop. Like,
yes.
Still constantly in that state of not knowing, or like, it's like my eyes have been opened. I know that something can go wrong. I'm constantly waiting for it. It's an awful place to be in.
You wouldn't have had a chance to process your what happened during your birth and the suddenness of that, and not having those things explained to you, not being able to debrief, to then suddenly, you know, coming into that situation with your beautiful boy, you knowing in your gut that there was something not right, and then just to have those things, you know, being knocked back. Can you tell the audience what he was diagnosed with?
So he had a double aortic arch, which was a blood vessel that came from his heart and wrapped around his airway, a random thing that happened obviously during him growing in my belly. It's a random thing. It's not a genetic thing or anything like that. Generally, it is picked up on at birth and it's repaired and all fine, but because it wasn't picked up on straight away, he ended up with a collapsed airway and had a tracheostomy for a year.
So that's a big thing when you're a young person. Thank goodness you had your mum and your partner or husband to support you. And then you fell pregnant again. How long was that after your second baby boy?
He was two, and that was at a time when he had his trachea removed. So everything was going sort of good. He was back to not having a tracheostomy, just getting back into normal life. And we were like, okay, like it's time. We wanted to have another baby. It was sort of planned. Yeah, we had Tiger, number two. With his pregnancy, everything was fine up until 38 weeks. My blood pressure was slightly elevated. And they were like, you need to have a cesarean like we seen what happened last time. And again, you got to remember, I'm 22. I'm only 2 years past. And I haven't even at all processed or gone through the massive amounts of grief and trauma that I didn't even know I was dealing with. I thought, I'm going to get my V back. I'm just going to get induced. They broke my waters on Christmas Eve. Yeah, he was just like sitting really high, sideways, wouldn't engage, wasn't ready. I didn't know anything about it. I was just like, okay, they're like, you know, we can keep trying, but reality is your chances aren't good. Being petrified of going through what I was again, like, I'll have a cesarean, just don't put me to sleep, please.
Yes.
Begging them. And so, yeah, I did. I had a cesarean. I was awake. It was a lot better than the first. And I was so happy to just experience seeing him be born.
And then your third bubby came along. You became pregnant again. Was that about 2 years after again?
4 years after, yeah.
After the birth of Tiger, baby number two, because as you said, like you're in a little bit more in control in that space, I suppose, that you're able to...
I went home from hospital the next day. I was like determined, I'm good, I'm fine. Just like roaring back into motherhood life. Didn't have time to do anything, process anything. I'm at home, I'm going to get back to my kids. Like it was just like... That was me. Like if I wasn't in that like lane of like, this is what's happening, like I know what's going on, then I was going to fall apart. And I wasn't ready for that.
And you can see, you know, just for as a teaching lesson, I suppose, for people who might be listening, we have to overcome certain barriers when we come into hospital. And for yourself, you've experienced trauma in that hospital. We could say that you being turned away 15 times from hospital, we know that through coroner's inquests, that that happens quite often to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, that their voices aren't listened to because they're young or they don't know what they're talking about.
I have to say, it was very much like that. You're a young first-time mum, you don't know what you're talking about. That was it.
With Bubby then, number three, you wanted to experience birth, I think, in a different way.
So our family's from here, but I was born and raised in Western Sydney. In between that time frame, yeah, we moved up here on country and we've been here ever since. It was sort of that time that I really started to spiral in depression. Like I was home, I felt safe and I fell apart. And I don't know if I've recovered, to be honest. Yeah, there's something about being at home that just like you can't mask anything. You can't hide. You can't pretend. When I fell pregnant with my third, there was a fire in my belly. I was determined. Like I learned everything I could. I studied everything. I wasn't letting anyone diagnose, tell me, do anything without me 100% knowing.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, I agree with this. Like, no, like I wanted to make my own decisions. And I'm not trying to be horrible, but I feel like you're only given half and half. You get told this is the risk of this, but it's never like a balanced thing. I wish that they, in the birthing industry, midwifery and all of that, that there was more information provided, because you're scared, you're growing life. And for some time people, it's the first time and you don't know. You only know what you're given. And if you're given scary stuff, you're like, okay, like what, you throw everything at them. We trust them. These are your healthcare providers. They're going to do the best thing for you. But sometimes it's not the best thing for you.
Absolutely. And doctors do, like, you know, we come from a position of we want to do the right thing by patients and we want to make sure that you and your baby are safe. But it's the wellness and feeling safe, held and secure. Like, is that something that happens when it's just, as you said, like this one way of doing things? So what I love about this for you and your journey was you had these really trying conditions in your first two pregnancies and deliveries. And then you went, I'm actually going to do things a bit differently and bring in the sort of spiritual aspect. And so you looked at ways of doing a VBAC too on country. Moving back to your home, and that's when we talk about the home, the sense of home gives us a sense of belonging. It calms our spirit. The restlessness that we often feel can be gentled as we sit on the land and we listen to the ancestors talking to us. And you know that you have that connection to your mob and people who've walked before you. So that can be a very powerful thing for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, is getting back to country. So that was your step number one, whether you meant to do it or not, but that was one of the big differences. And then you had a blessing on country.
It was a very personal, private family thing with the matriarchs, the women in my family. I feel like I really was empowered by that. We didn't do some big spiritual, like, make me have a natural birth. Like, it wasn't like that. It was just a gathering of women's business, supporting me, blessing me. But I had my mum, my nan, my aunties, my cousins, my nieces, my sisters with me. And yeah, it was really empowering. And it just connected me with them, with my country. And something that I always say is like my biggest thing and the thing that I'm so connected to is the matriarchs of our family. Like, I feel we're very intuitive women, and whether we want to be or not, like, that's just something that is like so strongly within my, like, the passed down of the women in my family. And yeah, I guess I really got into that and felt that and sort of started to connect back with who I am. You know, if I fast forward a little bit, just like something that's connected to that is, you know, now, it wasn't too long ago before I fell pregnant with this now baby, me and my mum were talking one day randomly, and I have been through all of these things, I've faced lots of things, I've experienced obviously lots of highs with my third birth, and I said to my mum, I just lost it, and I said to her one day, just randomly out of nowhere, you know, I just feel like there's so much generational trauma around birth in our family, and I don't know what it is, but I said, I'm just so connected to it, like, I feel like I need to do something, and she just lost it, and she's like, I don't know what, but she goes, I feel it too. So I know there's some really deep sort of stuff that, you know, and I love that my sort of work and the things that I do with birthing has connected me through that. And I do love that. So that was sort of an empowering thing for me, stepping into and learning about and knowing what I wanted to do with that birth.
Yeah. So that was part of your healing. Oh, I've got tears in my eyes now as well. Thank you for sharing that. Because it is, we hold trauma, and we know that, you know, the women in our family lineages will hold that trauma.
It's not just a healing for me. It's my mum feels it too, you know.
Yeah. And so that's one of the powerful things that we can do in birth, is to go back and heal those ancestral lineages through ritual and ceremony, through women's business. We actually can do that. And I love that's what you're stepping into, the big work that you're here to do, you know, in this world right now, is your beautiful earth blended, and you paint beautiful pregnant women.
I'm very connected to pregnancy and womanhood and all of it.
So now I want to come into the hero part. So you've called your power to you with this blessing on country, being supported by all the women in your family, and you're looking at ways of, you know, healing the trauma that you held around birth. People were saying to you as well, I remember you saying in your other podcast, is that your body just couldn't give birth. So you had all these negative stories that you're carrying with me.
My mum even actually used to say it to me. And she said it in a way where she was trying to be supportive, like, it's okay, like, you're just not meant to, like, that's okay. Like, you know, she was trying to support me and was worried for me to get my hopes up. A lot of other people said it as well, like, you know, and people that have had C-sections as well, just like, oh, you know, our bodies aren't meant to do this. And I was like, hell no. Yes, it is. I know it is. I can feel it from my toes to my head. Like, I'm 100% supposed to do this. And I did.
So you went in and you had a great supporting doctor and midwife. Is that right? Through leading up to this, to your VBAC?
Leading up to the birth, I didn't have the same midwife. I asked multiple times for an Indigenous midwife. I don't know if one wasn't available or not, but yeah, I wasn't provided that. I saw the doctor, the obstetrician the whole way. She was open and somewhat supportive of me having a VBAC. She did have concerns, but yeah, I wouldn't say she was like pro VBAC, but she was great. Like it was a pretty fairly good experience. But then when I went into labor, it was just whoever was on in the public system. I got the most amazing midwives ever. They were just 100% whatever I needed, whatever I wanted, like supportive, which was just like a breath of fresh air. I don't know if I would have got through it without them, to be honest. Like just, having that, you know what you're doing. Like, yeah, I needed that person. I knew what I was doing, but having that person reassuring me, like, yes, you do, like, go for it. Unfortunately, the doctor on call was very, very scared and
He was against VBAC.
Very much so. Being in a rural hospital, there isn't anesthesiologist people on call all the time. So if there was an emergency, or if, you know, the big scare with VBACs is a rupture in the uterus. So if that was to happen, I'd need to go for an emergency cesarean, and that's not like readily available. I mean, it is, like, they are on call. They would come in and obviously be there for me. And I knew that. But it wasn't like right there, ready to go. So obviously they were like super precautionary. And I mean, I think a lot of doctors aren't pro VBAC, unfortunately. So he wasn't supportive of that, and it was a little bit of a fight to get it. I was in labor for 22 hours, and it is a long time, and I get it. It is scary. I have had two scary births previously, but it was all perfect. Like everything went good. Like, I'm not stupid. I wouldn't put me and my baby at risk, and my body knew 100% what it was doing. I can't tell you now, but in that moment, it was like, okay, I got this. I got you, honey.
Yeah, and the fact that I love that you had a good support team. Like, so it's not like you weren't in the hospital. You were still in an environment where things could be escalated if it could be, and you had this beautiful cheerleading team with you. And your husband, how was he feeling? Was he traumatized?
Him and my mum were there. And my mum was so scared because the doctor kept coming in and she's like, oh, Jamie, like, you know, I'm like worried for you. I'm like, I got this, be quiet. but my husband was just over in the corner like, yeah, you got this.
Thumbs up.
Because I was very in my zone. Like, I'm not a screamer. I was just like rocking in my element. Just be quiet. No one talk and I'm good. My mum was worried. But the look on her face, like when they told me it was 10 centimetres, oh, my God, she lost it more than I did, I think.
So tell me that point. So when you finally get to, you've been in the zone, you've been rocking.
Yeah. So I'll never, ever forget it. They're like, oh, we're just going to check because the doctor's come in and he really wants us to check. And if you haven't progressed, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, whatever. I've been here for 20 hours. Sure.
Yeah, yeah,
check.
Yeah.
Tell me some good news. Open my legs. She's like, oh, yeah, you're 10 centimetres. And I was like, wait, like you're having this baby. I was like, can you just wait? Can you clarify that? Does that mean that this baby is coming out of my vagina? Like, there's no chances of a cesarean. I was very excited, overwhelmed. I'm like, I just need 10 minutes. Everyone just leave and let me cry for 10 minutes. I literally sat there and cried for 10 minutes before I started pushing.
So you're 10 centimeters. You're like, oh my God, is this actually happening? And then you ask everyone to leave so you can cry for 10 minutes. Oh, bless. Bless.
And then I actually I messaged my student midwife because I had a student midwife and I forgot about her. And I'm like, get here. And she did make it in time.
Oh, bless.
Then I was pushing the baby out, obviously. And I remember the beautiful midwife said to the student midwife, like, oh, like you can catch the baby. I was like, I'm doing this. I'm like, I got this far. I am catching that baby.
Yes.
And I just remember, like, I'm like, my husband, please take photos. He's over there taking photos. Like, babe, this thing's head moving around. Like, he was freaking out. He's like, what the hell is going on here? And yeah, next thing I knew, I put like a little bit of a cut and tear, and I yanked him out and he peed all over me. But we got there. And you know what? I think I laid there with him for like an hour breastfeeding. I never had that with my other kids. Like, I never got skin to skin. I never breastfed. She wasn't like, I need to weigh him, nothing. She's like, whenever you're ready.
And you just had that beautiful golden hour. You're able to like.
It was like, I can't, like, yeah, you don't realize how bad a traumatic birth is until you really experience it. And you're like, this is like amazing. It was amazing.
So that is a beautiful story, Jame. I can't love that more. You just had such a, you know, a circle. And then I just love it just before the end. Like for me, the power part is, you know, calling in those ancestral women to like make you feel empowered. And you're becoming older and a bit wiser as well, and being able to advocate for yourself in ways that you couldn't have when you were a 20-year-old girl. You know, you were just sort of going along with whatever anyone said, whereas now you sort of did your research and you found allies within the health system to, you know, be able to align with. In a perfect world, what would childbirth look like for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people?
I think the most important thing, medical staff, not just doctors, like midwives, like anyone, you know, that's obviously in the room advocating for the birth, being able to like stop and listen to a woman, like we are really, really smart. Like we know what we're doing, you know, giving us an opportunity to listen to our bodies. I just think it's really, really important. The things that I never really had the opportunity to, or even like, you know, pregnancy care, like teaching women to listen to their body. And, you know, things like there's a lot of things in pregnancy when you're like, oh, I'm worried about this, or movements. Like if you listen to your body, you know if there's something wrong or if there's not, or you know what I mean? Like, I just think it's really an important thing that like isn't spoken of. Like, what? Like, imagine listening to your body, the thing that's actually growing the baby, the thing that actually births the baby. Like, we know what we're doing postpartumly as well. Like, I know a lot of people have scares and there's lots of scary things. Sometimes they just need to go to NICU and stuff. But, you know, you need to listen to the parents. Like, we're the parents. It's something that really shocks me is the lack of, when something's wrong, like something that I probably haven't spoken of before. I remember Jordy, my first, when he was born, they whisked him away from me the first night to do like the heel prick or whatever. I was sitting in my room crying for 3 hours and they didn't tell me where they took my baby. I didn't know they took my baby. They just took my baby off me, and like, that's okay. There is no way. You cannot take a woman's baby off them. My grandmother had to run from the hospital so her baby wasn't taken away. My great-great-grandmother was forced to birth on an island and denied hospital care. Like, you can't take an Aboriginal woman's baby away, regardless if it's for health reasons, without explaining that to her and listening to her concerns as well.
Absolutely. And that makes me cry as well. Just in that very last sentence is where you can talk about where the birth trauma in your ancestral lineage is coming from, because Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people did have babies taken off them, or they were worried they had to, you know, give birth hidden, basically, so that, you know, children weren't stolen. And that is genetically within us as well. Like, we carry that trauma. Your story is like a modern day telling of it.
And I think the biggest thing is, this is why I say listen to women, because you're not going to understand that as a doctor or as a white woman or coming in or a white male and having no understanding or of our culture. And that's totally fine, but you need to respect us and what we have been through and what has genetically and, you know, ancestrally been passed down to us. There's good, there's bad, but it's there and it needs to be respected.
Absolutely. As you said, with your beautiful healing VBAC birth, is that teamwork, working together, having clear communication, for you to sort of say, are we having the baby at 10 centimetres? And she's like, yep, you're doing it. And you're like, yeah. You know, like that's what we need to hold on to. And that's the way I think we can heal the system and decolonize the system and take the racism out and listen to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander parents when they come up with concerns about their children. Do not dismiss them.
Yeah, and I think the thing is as well, like, just because you don't understand doesn't mean that it needs to be dismissed. Like, that's something that really upsets me, is I think a lot of things, you know, when you're looking at racially wise or anything like that, a lot of things is misunderstanding. And just because you don't understand something doesn't mean that it's not there or it's not valid and it's not okay. I think that's the biggest thing, because I feel like that's where a lot of the issues lays. If they don't get it, then it's not, what is it? It's not real. I guess it's not real because I don't get it. You know, like, that's silly.
Jame, thank you so much for coming and sharing your story. No, you moved me to tears on a couple of times. So we can find your beautiful paintings of your pregnant women and your beautiful sprays. I'm going to go and stalk your shop now myself, see if I can get a little something, something. Because you also have smudge sticks.
Yeah, so I call them burning bundles. They're eucalyptus and broad paper leaf bark from the tree, which is what we sort of traditionally use. I love them. I burn all of my products with them as I'm making them. So I like to see all of my intentions with everything I make, because everything is handmade sort of here, not just pre-made elsewhere and packaged along.
Beautiful. So everyone, we're going to put the James website and her Instagram details on our show notes, but check her out. And thank you so much, darling, for sharing your story. I loved it.
And it was great.
Thank you, darling. You take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Indigenous Health Med Talk with Dr. Danielle Arabina. Please subscribe to the podcast and check out our YouTube channel, Indigenous Health Med Talk. This podcast is a General Practice Training Queensland initiative, supported by Australian General Practice Training and the Australian Government.